My name is Michael Coates. I'm a former firefighter, but I'm also a former soldier. And it's the stories from the individuals within this military community that I'm desperate to document. Today's guest has crammed more into his life so far than anyone I've met. From joining the army age 17, becoming a commando, a para, and joining the SAS, he's protected individuals, organisations, and fought pirates in some of the most hostile environments on the planet. He works for Sky News, he's a best-selling author, and campaigns tirelessly for veteran welfare and fairness. This man really was born fearless. Episode 3, Phil Campion. This is Declassified. Phil, it's a pleasure having you with us today. How are you, sir?
I'm all right, mate. I'm good.
Good, good. Well, look, we're going to delve into loads of different topics today, and some will be a bit darker than others, but we've got about 45 minutes. But it's safe to say we're going to, you know, there's going to be a few dark ones, but you've had a colourful life. But we'll take you right back before any of that, and we'll talk about what was a young Phil Campion like? What was life growing up in Southampton like for you?
I alluded to in my book, I was adopted as a kid, so I never really fitted in with that family. Do you know what I mean? They were strange ones. They weren't me. She was sort of like middle to upper class, as you'd bracket them. Ex-school teacher, thought she was a bit clever. The old man was just a bully and a violent lunatic, and I never fitted in with him. I was just like the. Not there with them. Do you know what I mean? It just didn't feel right the whole time I was with them.
How old was you?
I was with them from about. They split up when I was about 7 or 8, but he'd beat me like a dog, like when I was younger, and she never really stood up for it. Do you know what I mean? I don't know the whole thing. So I don't go back. I don't dwell on me childhood as it was a terrible time, because. If there's one thing I've learned in life, is if you've got a negative, you can always draw a positive from it, even if it's just to realise how shit it was. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Are we all right with the old word?
Just do what you want, mate.
Okay,
It's
you know what I mean? The eyes are on the front of your head for a reason, because you want to go forwards, not backwards. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I don't try and dwell on the past too much.
But it's what makes us, isn't it? And like you said, we can get the positive from it. But childhood for you, so did you spend a lot of time outdoors? Or was you? What was
I
you
did,
doing?
Well, I went to a normal comprehensive school, but I got expelled. And then I did this IQ test thing, and they sent me to a public school. But I was like, I just didn't fit in at all.
Mm.
They were all posh with loads of money, and I was this kid from a council estate with no money. They used to call me Kevin.
Really?
Kevin. Because that was the poor people are called Kevin. Hey, it must be called Kevin then, you know what I mean? And it was like, they were just honking to me. They were horrible. And it was like, I just got bullied relentlessly. Until eventually I snapped and I smashed someone's head in, and they threw me out, and I ended up in a children's home. And then from there, I sort of like, went through the care system, through assessment centres, and then I ended up in a children's home in the New Forest, which was brilliant. I love the children's homes. Because once you learned to play the game, you were in like Flynn. You could more or less dictate your own life. It was great.
Well, it's good, isn't it? And you know, from a real kind of traumatic start to life, actually finding your feet in somewhere where you belong and where you want to be, especially in somewhere like the New Forest.
Yeah,
ideal for someone who wants to be outside.
It was outstanding. All I did was go skiing. It was like, poor kids in the kids' homes. Oh, let's go skiing. You know what I mean? And that was it. That's all I did. So I was like, suddenly found my place. You know what I mean?
So then it seems like a natural progression then, that you joined the military. Was it always on the cards to do that?
Right, so when I went to the public school, we had a CCF, a Combined Cadet Force.
Mm.
And that was my first exposure to the army. And I loved it and I thought it was great. But like I say, I didn't fit in with those people, so I never went anywhere with it. I got this job. I was on the YTS, the youth training scheme, and I got a job as a ski instructor. It was the biggest sky ever. You know what I mean? I was like, wow, this is ridiculous. Everyone else is like building and making things and doing stuff, and I'm like, I'm a ski instructor. It was unbelievable. So I'm like, wow, this is ridiculous. So I landed right on my feet.
What, you're 16 at this time?
No, I think I was 15 when I first started. Anyway, the geezer who ran the place was an ex-admiral from the Navy, and he let me roll on this for 2 years. And then at the end of it, I thought, he's bound to give me a job because I'm brilliant. And he's like, I ain't giving you nothing, mate, because you're not qualified. I had a cycle proficiency. I had nothing. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
It was ridiculous. I had absolutely no qualification. So I'd said to Griff before, oh, I might join the army. So as soon as those words come out of my head, he literally phoned up the careers office, and I was taken down there in a minibus. And next minute, I was like, right, I'm here. And that was it. And I'll never look back, really, because that was my introduction to the army.
Yeah, I mean, you joined 17. I joined at 16, and for me it was an escape as well, like leaving Hull and getting out of that environment. And when I joined, it was easier almost to be in than it was out. Like, I was
going down the
road
of getting into trouble. I'd just started getting into trouble. I had a junior ABH and I had a few things building up, do you know what I mean? And I was just starting to get loose, and the army proper brought me in and squared me away, like, do you know what I mean?
In what way?
I just felt I belonged somewhere. For the first time in my life, I actually felt I belonged. I enjoyed what I was doing. Mm. And like I say, if you enjoy what you're doing, you're not working, are you? Do you know what I mean? I got best improved recruit, which basically means he was the biggest idiot that turned up and we squared him away, like, do you know what I mean? Yeah. So it was like, no, I loved it. I really thought I belonged, like, do you know what I mean?
What year was that? What year did you...
87.
Okay, so well in the eight, yeah. So we're the start of a lot of stuff that's coming ahead then with regard to kind of conflict and all that kind of stuff. But at that time, you were a young lad, loving life, really thriving in what you were doing. And then how long, because you then went on, I'm just going to jump a little bit, but then you went on, did your commando course, did P Company, and got your power wings and all the rest of it. What time frame are we looking at? So from joining up,
I suppose.
Then doing all that kind of stuff, you know, really getting involved with being a proper soldier, really, and really kind of learning your craft.
Yeah, it took me about, I suppose I did 3 years in a rifle company, in which I spent 2 years residential tour of Northern Ireland, Londonderry. Yeah. We came back from there. I did my commander course on the way back from there. We then did a few tours here and there, but then back, it's just Northern Ireland. It was Belfast, Northern Ireland, then, wasn't it? Do you know what I mean? It was just Northern Ireland, Northern Ireland. We got a trip to Northern Ireland again, so that was more or less a sketch. And then, like I say, we amalgamated with the Queen's Regiment, so the Royal Hampshire's and the Queen's amalgamated.
So Royal Hampshire's what you joined?
I was a Royal Hampshire, and we amalgamated with the Queen's, and then that's sort of like, we had to go to Canterbury, and it was part of 5 Airborne Brigade. And they said, look, we need a platoon to be airborne trained. So that's how I ended up doing P Company, because to be honest, it was an extra, few quid a month, wasn't it? Do you know what I mean? You got your parapay, so I was like, well, I'm in for that one, do you know what I mean? So I did that, but it was only, I decided to go for on selection, which I know you haven't touched on yet, but it was basically, it was a decision that I made based around the amalgamation, because at the time I wasn't massively happy with the fact that they'd sort of like crushed all the Royal Hampshire's history and all this sort of stuff.
Yeah.
And so I got in a massive argument with the CO, and I got told I'd reach my ceiling in an afternoon, basically, do you know what I mean? Because I told them to F off about the amalgamation.
So this is the top boss? This is the top man?
What happened was, I did P Company, and we were due to do a tour of Northern Ireland. I'd just got married at the time, and I decided, right, I don't want to be going to Northern Ireland straight away. Free power in Dover. I've just done P Company. I phoned up. I bypassed the CO and went straight to the brigade commander, which was a guy called Johnny Holmes, who later became DSF when I was in DSF. So I've got a bit of history with Johnny Holmes. Anyway, I phoned him up straight to his desk, like, and he's like, who's this? I was like, it's Corporal Campion from PWR. Really, what do you want? I said, I want to go to free power. You know what I mean? And he went, yeah, I can sort that for you. Straight on the phone to the CO, who blew his top back at our place. What do you think you're doing? And I went in on this. He gave me a loyalties lecture. Well, we'd only just amalgamated. And I gave him a loyalties lecture back. I said, who are you to tell me about loyalties? You know what I mean? I'm a Royal Hampshire. You've just put this thing on me. You know, I was like, how can you tell me about loyalties when you've just destroyed the regiment that brought me up and all this stuff? Do you know what I mean? So we had this massive argument. And I told him to F off straight to his face. And walked out. Anyway, I walked straight out of his office, past the RSM, who was still screaming at me, and there was a guy called Henry Egan, Major Egan. And he went, well done, Corporal Campion, you've just reached your ceiling in an afternoon. Hey, I can see there's going to be some fallout from this. I suggest you get out or go somewhere else. And that was when I decided to go on selection, basically.
Yeah, so we got, just for those that don't know, so P Company is...
Parachute selection.
Yeah, so we can do that as a normal soldier, basically.
You had to do it. You had to do it to do your jumps. You couldn't do your jumps if you hadn't done P. I could have done, actually, because I'd done my commando course.
Yeah.
But I felt like I robbed everybody else of it. So I thought, right, I better do P Company anyway. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's good. And you know what? You're referencing something there that you referenced earlier on as well, and that's that belonging. And actually, when something changes for you, it's like, well, actually, time to move on now and let's find something else. And
yeah,
amalgamation must have felt like that a little
bit. I was quite hasty, because the Princess of Wales's Royal Regiment are at my heart now, you know what I mean? I'm an original, as they call me, you know what I mean? So I love the regiment. But at the time, you know, it just felt, I felt like I'd been screwed over a little bit, to be honest, you know what I mean, by the system. It was amalgamation was a dirty word, wasn't it, you know what I mean? We didn't like it, and... Funny story, actually. From the amount, I said to the RSM, I said, I'm never going to go on the parade that when we change our berries. He goes, you'll be on that parade. I says, I will never do that parade. I said, I'm not doing it. He said, Corporal Campbell, he said, you'll be on that parade tomorrow morning. So anyway, unbeknown to him, we had this, you had to do a rehearsal for the parade where you'd done this bone, berry off, berry on, do you know what I mean? Anyway, we had to rehearse it before we went to school. I had a Mohican. I cut a Mohican into my hair. So I'm stood there in the front row like that, and he goes, berries off. Berry come off. Champion, what's that? He said, get on the square. I said, I told you I wasn't doing the parade. Get out of here. Hey. Yeah, mad.
So, mate, yeah.
I went up and down the ranks a few times, mate, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. But that's it. It's that colourful life you've had then led you on to say, you know what? I'm off. I'm going to go do something that's beyond most people's comprehension, and I'm going to go and join or attempt to join the SAS.
Yeah.
And so going from being on a Mohican on a parade square, how long was that?
I don't know. Do you know what? Because they made me do. We had a 2-year residential tour of Omar, and the CO said to me, "I want you in my cop platoon." He said, "I'm not letting you go on selection till then." So I screwed the nut. I did a year for him, and then after that year, he said, "Right, you can now apply for selection," which I did. I always joke when people say to me, oh, "What's the hardest part of selection?" I say, "Getting on it," because it took me nearly three years to get on it. Like, do you know what I mean? Yeah, it's ridiculous. So that, I have a bit of a standing joke about that. But I've got to tell you, with selection, and you've alluded to it yourself, right? It's out of it. People seem to think it's out of their reach. It's not. And I'll tell you for why. Because people only listen to the people who failed when they talk about going on selection. Do you know what I mean? So the people who failed build it up as this, oh, mate, yeah, it's impossible to make you go up the hill with a house on your back. And you're like, no, I never did that at all. Do you know what I mean? It's within anybody's grasp who can pass the BFT, basically, which is a basic fitness test for those people that don't know. Do you know what I mean? All you got to do is it's monkey see, monkey do. And if monkey can't do anymore, monkey goes home. And that's it. Do you know what I mean?
Mm. Well, so, and what was it like then? What was it like for you going through?
It was like being in basic training again. I loved it. It was like, it called me a sucker for punishment, but selection for me was like, once you get the hills out of the way, because the hills is a bit of a bash, you know, up and down the hills every day, you're walking God knows how many Ks every day, and it's hard work, and nobody even pays any attention to you while you're on the hills. You're like, you're a number. But when you get to the jungle's like, oh, I'm in the jungle. You know what I mean? You're like, this is soldiering. This is the blueprint for anything soldiering. Do you know what I mean? And I loved it. It was, if you were keen and you enjoyed your soldiering, the jungle was the place to be. It was ridiculous.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
So we got, because you've really gone over the fact that actually the authority or your, not disrespect for authority, but how did you handle authority, especially then going from.
You can say it. I was an absolute loose cannon.
Yeah.
In fact, my CO had once said that Corporal Campion should be kept in a box and only taken out in times of conflict, because he's an idiot, like, do you know what I mean? Yeah. He's great on the battlefield, but the man's a lunatic in camp, like, do you know what I mean? So it was like, authority, I don't like it. I never had any ambition to go above the rank of full screw. I didn't want to be anything other than a trooper. I just wanted to be the geezer that pulled the trigger and the gun. Do you know what I mean? I never professed to want to be a colonel, or I didn't want to go up the ranks. I didn't want to do this. I didn't want to do that. I just wanted to be the geezer that was in the field giving out the fist and boot.
So what was it? So when you're on selection, I'm just going to go, like, excuse my ignorance on it. But what's it like there then? Because there's obviously taking on people shouting at you on parade squares with a Mohican. Now are you? Do people shout at you in selection, or is it?
No.
You're driven yourself to do this stuff.
You've got to be self-motivated on selection, which is great because you're enjoying what you're doing. So I loved what I was doing on selection. And like I say, it really is monkey see, monkey do. They do it, you do it. They do it, you do it. They show you, you do it. Do you know what I mean? And that's it. That's selection in a nutshell. I'm not saying it's easy. It's hard. They do hard things. Do you know what I mean? But it's fun. It's great. And if you love soldiering, You're in the epitome of soldiering. Do you know what I mean? You are the Ayatollah of soldiering. It's ridiculous. I loved it. It was great. I really had fun.
Finished all that, top of your game, or certainly the top of that pile. You go into go down to Hereford. You start the proper soldiering now. Mm. What was life like? What's the culture like of being a kind of special forces?
It's relaxed, but there's constraints. Do you know what I mean? There is an element of Not BS, as it were, do you know what I mean? It's not like you're treated as an adult. Everybody's got an opinion at Hereford, do you know what I mean? You are treated as an adult. It is slightly different in that respect, but there is a rank structure. Do you know what I mean? There is a clear rank structure. So it's not like, oh, it's just lawless, I go to Hereford and start. You know what I mean? It's not like that, do you know what I mean? But this, you know, slamming your feet in and marching about and jumping up and down and all the rest of the stuff that sort of like turned me away from the army a little bit, isn't there at Hereford. Do you know what I mean? You are treated like an adult. You go to work, you go home. You go to work, you go home.
Yeah.
And, you know, what you do in your work hours is decent work. You don't do anything for the sake of doing something. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Which, and people know what I'm on about within the normal army. Do you know what I mean? Like, what do we do that for? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, so let's sweep some hangers.
Why did they bring me in for that? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
So let's get on the truck.
So
do you know what I mean?
So it's really to the point, actually. And what I'm getting from you there, it's pretty open-minded. So there's... You can have your input into how something's done.
Yeah, of course you can, yeah.
And there's that rank structure, but a relaxed environment where you can thrive and actually start being a...
You can relax, be yourself and do what you're supposed to do instead of wondering, have I got the crease on the right leg? Have I got my boots shiny enough? Do you know what I mean? All that sort of stuff is dropped. It's not required. I understand there's a place for it, okay? And if you did that in the wider army, as they call it, you probably would lose control pretty quickly, like, do you know what I mean? So it is a specialist environment, and that's why it probably is more relaxed in that sense.
Yeah,
but
okay.
It's, you know, it, if you go on ops, even as a normal soldier, you don't get all that BS, do you? You don't get all the snivelling bullshit. Because the soldiers have got enough on their mind to think about just keeping themselves alive. So you can get rid of all that bullshit. That bullshit is to keep people on the rails and get them trained and keep them going in camp, isn't it? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You don't need that for special forces. You don't need that because you're so involved. You're always doing something, and it's always something that's constructive. Do you see what I mean?
It's you're bang on. When it's time to work, let's work.
Yeah, and when it's time to play, let's absolutely knock the hoop out of it. Unfortunately, I knocked the hoop out of it a bit too much, and that's probably why I didn't stay in as long as I could have done.
But I mean, I'm sure that's another podcast.
I've been podcasting the bits on that one. Don't worry about it.
You mentioned ops there, and I don't want to go into it too much because I know you're just going to palm me off anyway. But one op I want to talk about, Op Barris in Sierra Leone, is it's well documented. You've documented your kind of quite vague story, actually.
You know, the press had picked up on it before we'd even got the helicopters. You know what I mean? So yeah. it was talked about. And people are going, oh, you're not allowed to talk. Right, the rules basically are, in the very loosest of senses, that if it's not compromising anybody's safety and if it's already in the public domain, you can talk about it. I am talking about it and I'm not compromising anybody's safety.
Because, I mean, Sierra Leone is one of these kind of conflicts in brackets where I don't think the British public know too much about it, but loads of our guys are affected by it and loads of, at the time, were affected by it. And especially this op that you was on.
Yeah, I mean, and the whole thing from top to bottom, it was a brutal civil war. And a West African civil war isn't like, you know, a dust-up in Northern Ireland. They were hacking limbs off people. They were knocking the tops off. All sorts of stuff was going on. Do you know what I mean? It was horrible. It was honking. It was disgusting. There was vile things happening on a large scale. Do you know what I mean? It wasn't... They don't play it in West Africa. Do you know what I mean? As you'll know. Do you know what I mean? It's a different level. It's a different level. People said to me before about the IRA, these people are on a different level to the IRA. These people were doing honking, disgusting things as a normal, everyday practice. Do you know what I mean? They are disgusting, vile people, these people, okay? They're almost inhumane.
So we're referring to the West Side Boys?
I'm referring to the West Side Boys and the former RUF or whatever they wanted to call themselves, because it changed every 5 minutes anyway, didn't it?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So, you know, troops were going down there. They were employed within that... within that environment. It was a horrible, disgusting environment to work in.
Yeah.
Okay. We ended up down there purely because, you know, of an error of judgment on someone's part. You know, these lads got taken and we went down there to get them back.
So you're referring to the there was 11 guys
the Royal
taken,
Irish.
There was Irish that got captured.
No, there was more than that. There was 11 that went. Five got released halfway, I think six got released halfway through or something, you know what I mean? And then there was five
left
in there, and that was the five that we went in to get.
Which is, so that's part of the extraction. So D Squadron 2-2-SAS went in to extract. One para went in to do a diversion.
Yeah, they went into support. So there was two sides of the river. There was Magbeni and there was Gaberi Banner. Gaberi Banner was where the West Side Boys had the stronghold with the lads. That's where they were kept. And on the other side of the river was like an administrative base for them where there was supposed to be more troops. So what we didn't want to happen was, you know, everything's fine and they suddenly get clobbered from the south, like, do you know what I mean? That would have been disastrous. So basically, you know, the parachute regiment came out, done a fantastic job and basically kept us wrapped in a bubble while we did our... It's like putting a donut bandage round while you work in the hole, like, do you know what I mean? They looked after the outside, we looked after the inside. Do you know
what I mean? Just to kind of give a... There's a really good Discovery Channel documentary about it all. So right. I'd recommend people go to that, because it's unbelievably interesting. But just to give to concept where you are with this, so these guys are captured for, a couple of weeks, wasn't it?
Oh, they were kept for quite, I can't remember the dates exactly.
And it was horrendous, wasn't it?
They were there for quite a time. They witnessed mock executions. They were manhandled. They weren't massively beaten up. Musa, the Sierra Leone guy that was with them, he got beat to pieces. Like, do you know what I mean? He was in a bad way. But they were exposed to a lot of stuff that they shouldn't have been exposed to. Do you know what I mean? And they were treated. You know, you can imagine being a hostage to a West African. It's not party time, is it? Do you know what I mean? You are going to be experiencing a lot of stuff. So they were in there for whatever it was. I can't remember exactly how long they were in there for. You know, D Squadron went out there, came up with all these different ideas of how we were going to get them out, and eventually went with the one that we called Operation Certain Death, which was fly two helicopters into the middle of the village, disembark, take back the hostages and deal with what's left,
yeah.
Which we did.
Which you did.
Yeah.
Very well, and it was the start of...
Well, it ended hostilities in that region, because basically, you know, for weeks after we left, there were people walking in with bits missing, going, I've had enough of fighting the British. I mean, they didn't want no more of it after that.
It is an amazing story, and we can't go into it fully today, but I'd
maybe we'll come back and do a Sierra Leone special or something like that.
Yeah, I'll get a few other guys in and we'll go over that. But the what's the website that you wrote? You did a big piece on that, didn't you? I'll put it in the notes.
Yeah, mate, I've spoken on it in two or three different sites. Yeah, Damien Lewis wrote a book called Operation Certain Death.
All right, okay.
Which I know all about.
Perfect.
Without saying too much, and that was a cracking book. Do you know what I mean? That highlighted the whole thing from start to finish. And I think he spoke to a few of the hostages. So you got it from both sides of the coin, yeah. Do you know what I mean?
All right, well, that's great. Then I'm going to tap that up as well, actually, and get that read. So we got, that's 2000. That was 2000.
That was 2000.
You left not long after.
2001.
Why did you leave, though? Because it seemed like it was the perfect environment for you to be with.
It was a great place. It was a great... I had a few issues myself going on at home. Do you know what? When I came back from Sierra Leone, that was like, it was so good. And then the week after, we were in Denmark doing an exercise, you know, pulling people out. And I was like, I got a bit disillusioned. Lost my way a little bit. Got in a bit of trouble downtown. Fell out of my sergeant major. And basically came to the decision that I'm going to buy my way out. So that's what I did. Do you know what I mean? And I think I fell on my sword. Because if I'd have carried on the way I was going to get slung out anyway, to be honest.
Oh, right. Okay.
Do you know what I mean? So, I fell on my sword, as it were.
What was family life like then at that time? Because I'm assuming you was away backwards and
forwards. Yeah, I had a sort of like strange relationship with my missus. Like, do you know what I mean? It wasn't great. We're not together now. Do you know what I mean? My son was great, but my missus wasn't. So it was like, you know, the whole thing was coming apart. So I had a few issues going on at home at the time. I'm not going to blame it on that, because ultimately it was me that decided to get in trouble.
Yeah. Well, I mean, life is life as well.
And I drank a lot in them days as well. So I was quite a loose cannon. And if you looked at me funny in the pub in those days, you got belt fed straight away. You know what I mean? I didn't use drank back.
Yeah, blimey, yeah. I mean, is that got something...
And that's not tolerated at Hereford at all. Do you know what I mean? That's, you know, it's a part and parcel of, you know, being an SF soldier, as you behave yourself on the...
And that was your down. That was your downfall then?
It was
so that
downfall,
was down to
yeah.
you, that was your personality?
Yeah. It was me.
What was
all
going
over.
On in your...
Yeah, but I had no ambition of rising through the ranks. I just wanted to be a trooper. I didn't want to run the team. I just wanted to be the man they let off the lead.
But there's a difference, though, isn't there, between, you know, being that professional soldier and then what you just said there about someone looking you strange in a pub and wanted to have a fight, essentially.
Yeah, that was my character. That was how I was. You know, I was a live wire. I was, you know, highly strung. If I'd have been an officer, I'd been called highly strung. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, okay.
It was, as a trooper, I was just a thug. You know what I mean?
So you got out, and which, again, a natural progression, really. Then you joined the private security circuit.
Not straight away. I couldn't find any work. So I got out, and I was messing about taking computer chips around London and a few sort of like low-key jobs. And I literally ran out of money. I had nothing. And this was the biggest wake-up call ever. I had no money. And people were going, I couldn't feed my family. I'd spent everything. There was nothing coming at the end of the month. And I'm like, what am I going to do? So someone said to me, you'll have to go and take a crisis loan out. Crisis loan, what's that? So we'll go down to the job centre, you fill all these forms in, and they'll lend you some money till you get paid. So I went down to the job centre. I was there for hours. And I got grilled by this 18-year-old woman who's like, why did you get out of the army? Don't think I can give you this. Can't give you that. Can't give you the other. This is your fault. That's your fault. I was lining up to get nothing. Anyway, she agreed to lend me £60 if I went on a job interview. So she sort of like says to me, she says, oh, what did you do in a former life? What's your CV? And I'm like, I'll give her all the chat. Do you know what I mean? Yeah, I'm a rancid bringer of steely-eyed death. Yeah, I'm an underwater knife fighter. I'm all this. I'm that and the other. D Squadron 22 SAS, love. Do you know what I mean? If you want to kiss the guns, you can now. Do you know, all that sort of stuff, right? So give her all that patter. And she looked at me as if she goes, yeah, but what have you got? And actually, when you analyse it, I had a cycle proficiency. Do you know what I mean? That was it. So she ran all these things. She put it all in the computer. She's like, computer says no. Do you know what I mean? And I was like, well, what job can I go for? There was only one job. One job in the whole of the south of England, right? And, well, I do this on my talks, and no one can ever get it. It was Lollipop Man. There was a Lollipop Man in Margate they needed. And that was the job. I had to go to the interview. I was like, oh, my God. She says to me, she says, what do you want to earn every year? I says, 50 grand. She said, you're having a laugh. She said, 50 grand. She goes, you ain't going to make 50 pound a week, you
that's
lunatic.
A, that's a lot of crossing.
Yeah, anyway. Get over there. Anyway, so it really did. It was an eye-opener. And I was lining up to go on this interview for Lollipop Man. And I had to go. I had no choice. If you wanted the 60 quid, you had to go for the interview. So we said, luckily, the day I left the job centre with me little green thing with the 60 quid on it that I had to go and cash in at the post office, I got a call from a friend of mine saying, look, we got this job in Afghanistan. It was 55k a year. And they sent me the contract the next day. And I went down and I give it to the woman. I go, yeah, you're 55k. 55k.
Yeah. Right,
like,
yeah.
Do you know what I mean? I was like, whoa. Jeez. But I come close to the wire. Do you know what I mean? I was like staring down the barrel of absolutely nothing.
And did you enjoy that time then? So you flew out to Afghan. So this was 2001.
Yes,
9/11 had kind of
literally post conflict. It was I was almost there as the regiment were taking up place. You know what I mean? I was I think I got into town before they did. It was ridiculous. It was a great time. It was a great time to be there. It was insane. There was no law, so you could literally cut about doing your own thing.
Yeah, yeah. And then, so essentially, you were there to set up.
I was working for the European Commission, and we set up all their security on the houses, all the close protection. You know, so we trained all the guards, the whole thing. So
who was with you at the time then? So was the other lads?
Yeah, they were all ex military.
Yeah.
The team leader when I got over there was ex-SF. The other two lads have been around the block a little bit, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And at the time, the circuit really wasn't that big. And you were either on it because you were SF or you knew somebody, and that was it, bust. Do you know what I mean? There was none of this sort of like walking out, I'm going to be a bodyguard type thing, do you know what I mean? Mm. You had to know somebody.
But that went on for quite a long time, because I know lads have gone in since.
It did, I mean.
You let's know someone who's going to get the best jobs.
As soon as Iraq kicked in big style, the floodgates opened, and they couldn't fill the positions. But there wasn't enough guys to fill the positions that they had, do you know what I mean? So it was ridiculous. But in the early days in Afghanistan, it was a good number. It was great. You know, you were cutting around. You had diplomatic status. You know, we had all this stuff going on. We could still tap into the military sources because we had diplomatic status. So it was great, yeah.
Relatively safe at this point, or was it?
It could be hairy at times, you know what I mean? It wasn't a doddle. You were earning your money, do you know what I mean? You weren't being paid for nothing. It is, otherwise, you wouldn't have been there, do you know what I mean? Because in my experience in Civvy Street, you know, the first chance they get to cut security and cut that wage bill away, that you'll go, do you know what I mean? You're the first thing to go every time. Do you know what I mean? Every job I've been on, as soon as things get quiet and they're not required anymore, security gets cut away. You know, you're gone. You get gone quicker than anybody else.
Yeah,
I mean?
You live by the sword, you die by the sword, kind of a thing. You know, you take the money, but you're off again.
Yeah,
but you did a lot.
There's
no
security in security, mate.
Yeah, right.
It's basically what I'm saying. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. So I mean, you did a lot there, didn't you? So you was in Afghan, you did Iraq, Israel, Gaza.
Yeah,
Africa.
All West Africa. I did all the, and then the anti-piracy stuff kicked off. Yeah. So I did a few years at that as well. Do you know what I mean?
Was you chasing money?
Yeah, I was chasing the dollar.
Not the excitement?
No, there wasn't. A lot of these jobs didn't have any excitement. You got excitement through default. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
There wasn't any job. If you'd have given me a job that had excitement, I'd have dropped the money. But there wasn't any jobs of excitement. It was all...
So there was no...
chances. You took risks. You know, you did some insane stuff on some of these jobs, but it wasn't like, you know, right, there was no jobs out there that were saying to me, right, Phil, you're now going to take this village on, or Phil, you're going to kick some doors in, or Phil, you're going to be... There wasn't nothing like that, do you know what I mean? Mm. So you had to take sort of like second best. And in the end, it became to me about the money. Because the work was poor. I didn't like the work.
How long was you away for at a time?
Oh, mate, I was going away. Do you know what? The first time, and this was a really funny experience. The first time I went to Afghanistan, I was there for nearly 8 months without going home. Wow. And we couldn't get local food. And when I came home, and I've always heard like Indians say, oh, your people, you smell of milk. Do you know what I mean? Oh, your people did smell of milk when Phil got home. He really did. I was like, this is amazing. But my missus said, I smell of curry. Do you know what I mean? Really? She said, you smell the spices. And it was, just that, because that's how long you were doing away, like, do you know what I mean?
You really
actually ingrained yourself. You became The blokes were going local on some of these job sites. In fact, some of the geezers stayed over there. Like,
oh, really?
I mean? Yeah, I've got a friend of mine who converted to Islam and all sorts and stayed out in Iraq in the end. So you were out. You were doing long stints away.
Mate, it's such an interesting time that them first kind of couple of years. And I know lads who have been out there, and I know of people that have literally died by the sword as well in some horrendous cases, because you were just
and there was
dropped.
No recognition for that either. So there's no medals in Civvy Street, do you know what I mean? So you could do almost the same tours, and in some instances take insane risks. No medals, no pension, no. You just took your bunny and you went home and you shut your mouth and you didn't whinge, do you know what I mean? You just... And almost you were railroaded into that work. There was no work for me in Civvy Street in the UK.
Yeah.
There was nothing here, nothing at all.
Did you feel, you know, because you've got these bunch of lads that are all from similar backgrounds, but essentially you're all chasing a bit of cash. Did you feel like there was the team? Did you feel like you were working together?
You did
feel
when
like
you were
safe?
In a good team. You did when you were in a good team. But there was, you know, people run off with contracts, people nick your work, people backstab you. You lose, you know, there's that element of it. You can't lose your job when you're in the army for that sort of thing. Do you know what I mean? That's ridiculous. The worst you're ever going to get is either bust down the ranks or slapped in nick for 28 days. When you're in Civvy Street, you lose your job. There's no money.
Yeah.
That's it, bust, gone. Oh, what happened there? Oh, there's no money, Phil. Well, we don't want you anymore. What do you mean you don't want me anymore? I'm Phil. So what? Get out. You know what I mean? That's the sort of thing you're faced against. It's a totally different world.
What was your last contract you was on before you came back?
The last one, actually, I went to Albania for a friend of mine. I've got a very good friend. I'm not going to say his name on here because he wouldn't appreciate it. His ex-regiment. He's given me loads of work over the years, you know what I mean? And I've always remained... Loyalty is a massive thing to me. And I've always remained loyal to everybody I've worked for. And John, you know, reflected in how much work John gave me, basically. Do you know what I mean? I've just said his name. I won't give you
there's
a second name, right?
Yeah, there's a million
But he gave, he gave me lots of work. And I went to Albania for John. Great job. Came back. I had a few problems at the time, actually. So I came back and went to Winchester for a little bit.
Okay. All right.
I was remanded in custody for about 3 weeks, but he gave me a job to get me out of the country long enough to sort myself out.
Just to sort yourself out.
Yeah.
What year was that?
Oh dear, that's only a few years ago. I got threatening behaviour, but the whole thing got blown out of proportion, and I ended up remanded in custody in Winchester.
Yeah.
It's my character, do you know what I mean? It's me. I'm loud, I'm brash. You know, if you don't know me, I could come across as offensive, and obviously I had a massive argument with a neighbour, a window got broken, and I ended up down the tube. Do you know
because you're
and when you're
people
me,
know your background
when
as
you're
well.
Me, do you know what I mean? When you're Phil Campion, this big geezer who's written books and gobbed off about being in the SAS, as soon as you go rogue, you're going down the pan. Yeah. You know what I mean? what magistrate in the world would go, oh, let him go home for that one? Do you know what
Which
I mean?
Is,
you're going to get reminded straight away.
I was speaking to some guys who help veterans kind of through the prison system and custody and all this kind of thing. And they were saying there was a reoccurring thing that was happening was that because someone had been in, the police automatically took more severe kind of actions on.
They will do. And with your background, they knew who I was. Mate, my lawyer even said to me, when I first got picked up, right, my lawyer said to me, he said, I don't know what you've done, he said, but they are going to remand you in custody for something that was trivial, for something that really ultimately could have been dealt with on the spot. An on-the-spot fine for threatening behaviour. Do you know what I mean? And I went to Winchester for 3 weeks. Mm. Incommunicado. I wasn't even allowed to make phone calls. It was ridiculous, the treatment I got. It was like I was straight gone. Bang.
What did you feel like then, 3 weeks in there?
Devo. Absolutely gutted. I was like, oh, here we are. Do you know, I remember sitting in my cell, welling up, going, well, that's a bit extreme. Do you know what I mean? I was like, what? How's it come to this?
But was it a reflection on you then? Was you looking at yourself and thinking, actually,
I did look I've put myself in this position. Riding a bit wild, like, do you know what I mean? And I thought, you know, I've got to sort myself out. But when you know, I was that low, I could have got under a snake's belly with a top out. Mm. You know what I mean? I really could. I felt absolutely, where do I go from here? What can I do? It was absolutely...
You'd really fallen then, hadn't you?
Yeah, horrendous, horrendous. Yeah, hideous.
Did you have...
And I knew when I came out, I wasn't going to be able to get work on the security industry because I'd have this charge hanging over my head, which was, although it's only threatening behaviour, there's an element of violence in there, do you know what I mean? So your SIA badge is going to be annulled, all that sort of stuff, do you know what I mean? So you know now, you're in an absolute world of it, aren't you? Do you know what I mean?
And when you... I know it was only 3 weeks. It's probably a long 3 weeks. Was you talking to anyone about it, or was it just all self-contained?
No, because there was nobody in there I could really talk to. I didn't trust anybody in there, do you know what I mean? I went into sort of like almost survival mode with what I'd been taught, do you know what I mean? And I went to the big four straight away, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I can't answer that question, sir. I can't answer that. You know what I mean? I don't want anything to speak to nobody.
And so 2011, I'm kind of maybe jumping around dates a little bit. 2011, you wrote your first book.
Yeah.
born fearless. Was that a little bit of kind of therapy for you to do that? Did you, because you went like, in? Because you can look back on it now and think about what
it
happened.
It was fun writing that book. I enjoyed it. I got on very well with Damien, the ghostwriter.
Yeah.
He'd asked me to write a book when I first got out of the regiment. I said, I ain't got nothing to write about. Do you know what I mean? Because I can't write about the regiment, so what have I got to write about? After spending 10 years on the circuit, I did have quite a lot to write about, so that's why I decided to write Born Fearless.
Yeah.
And we did. And we, do you know what? My English teacher would have had an absolute, he'd have pulled his hair out, he'd have shot himself, he really would have, he'd have gone. Because I deconstructed the grammar on that book. So I'd give Damien the content, and then he wrote this book, all right? And then I had to sort of like rewrite the book in my own words.
Yeah.
So I said, I wouldn't say it like that. There'd be a few F words in there, or what are you saying that for? It's not isn't, it's ain't. Do you know what I mean? So yeah. I deconstructed the grammar in a perfectly good book. I thought it was the best thing ever. Like,
it's not nothing, it's now.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'd just love to have wiped it in my English teacher's face. There you go, that, mate.
That's, but again, it's life, isn't it? That's life. And I've done a bit of... I've wrote a book. It's not like yours, mate. It's boring. But I wanted my tone of voice. I wanted people to hear me.
Yeah, it's got
to
be
speak.
You. It's got to be people who know me. You rude, born fearless. Go, that's Phil. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. They know that straight away. But if I'd have left it as Damien had it, it'd have been. I went downtown today. You know what I mean? It was absolutely. It was boring.
And if we, I mean, the book you mentioned then, a little bit of therapy for you. But what's your, because you go back 10 years on the circuit. Places like Sierra Leone, and then coming from the background you come from, it's quite a traumatic experience. And what I don't want to get into here is that trauma is only affected by people seeing horrendous things. Sometimes there's feelings
What's your relationship
now with kind of trauma and mental well-being and mental health?
Do you know what strikes me with a lot of guys? Some guys almost have regrets that they didn't do more when they were in, and that can be a trauma on its own. Do you know what I mean? I get a lot of guys going, I wish I'd done this, I wish I'd done that, and they're actually sort of like, wish they could go back and rewrite the book for themselves. Do you know what I mean? And that can have an effect on people as well. The whole thing, it doesn't have to be body parts all over the floor and all the sort of like stuff that we sort of like deem to be with PTSD. Yeah. It's a transition into Civvy Street, which isn't going right.
But what about you, Phil? What's your relationship with trauma? How have you managed to kind of mitigate the risk against, or have you kind of overflowed?
I've spoke about it with friends. You know, the wheels have come off for me more than once. You know, hence the Winchester story. You know what I mean? Yeah. So, nobody's above having a down moment. I think the way I deal with it is I've dealt with everything in my life. The eyes are on the front of my face because I want to go forwards. Do you know what I mean? And I always strive to find the positive out of a negative.
But you're big, Phil. Campion, you can't have had mental health issues. Surely not.
Of course not. No, of course you can't. Anyone's susceptible to it. Not just, you know what I mean? Not just Private Bacon Neck, who's had a bad time on a hard tour.
Yeah.
Everybody could have one of those moments. And God forbid, it doesn't happen to anybody, but it does, unfortunately. Do you know what I mean? And I think one of the big things is that you actually recognise that it's happening to you and stick your hand up and go, whoa, I'm having a problem here. Do you know what I mean? And that's one of the things I think that goes wrong. Guys won't admit to having problems. Guys just bottle it up. Guys sit there.
Did you ever recognise it? Did you ever recognise symptoms? Because even on a micro level, you know, if you have a few beers the night before, not enough sleep, a row with the missus, all these kind of things, that can affect your mental well-being day to day.
Yeah, of course it
But
can.
If it builds up and builds up and all these small actions get magnified, did you recognise when your mental health wasn't quite aligned?
Yeah, I think you don't recognise it as being mental health. You just think I'm having a downer. Do you know what I mean? I don't call having a downer mental health, and that's the difference. People now have tagged everything. Whoa, it's mental health. I tag it differently, and I think that's probably how I cope with it. Well, I'm not mental. There's nothing wrong with me.
Yeah, yeah.
I have a down day, I have a good day. Do you know what I mean? So, I've never been officially spoken to by a doctor for that sort of thing, but I've had some deep, thoughtful, on-me-own moments. Do you know what I mean? But I'm always, I've talked to my missus loads. I love my missus. She's like my best mate. Do you know what I mean? So, and if I didn't talk to her, I'd talk to my son. Do you know what I mean? I got really well with my son. Do you know what I mean? So he's like a best mate. So, you've got to find that one person. There's got to be one person in your life. Do you know what I mean? I've said this to people before. There must be one person in your life that you can reach out and touch.
It's relevant. So what you just said then, it's speaking to that one person or the couple of people who you know and trust. Yeah. And actually there's other helplines as well, like even like things like the Samaritans where you can speak to people.
Yeah.
And again, we'll delve into this a little bit more in a second, but I went through, a couple of years ago, I went through a little thing with when I was in the fire service. And it was one of the reasons why I left. And my, not to bore you too much with this story, but it is relevant. And my youngest daughter was born, but she, great labour, great pregnancy, all the rest of it, but she was born in ill health. So she came out and she was limp, and essentially she'd inhaled a meconium, so she'd inhaled a poo on her lungs. And she came out and I was like, she's dead. Like, no worries. She's actually fine now, right? So she's good and she's fully healthy. But I just felt like, yeah, done. All the doctors around her, all this kind of stuff. And it immediately took me back 7 years to when we were doing CPR on a little baby in the fire service.
Yeah.
And even now I'm talking about this, I know them lads will hear this, and I still think, will they laugh at me back because I'm saying it? But at the time, there was a dark cloud over me. I'd want to cry every day. And it was an issue. And the way I approached it first was make a joke out of it to the lads, just to gauge what there was. And then I started speaking to my missus. My brother was great. His mate, Richie, was great. And I just started speaking and then found that it was that feeling I was going to be like, I'm a bit of a pussy. That did not happen. These guys who I trusted and kind of loved was then making sure that I was looked after, and just kind of got through that period. And it started with a conversation.
And you've got to
your message
to anybody who's struggling is, please stick your hand up. Do you know what I mean? Touch somebody, reach out, just speak to somebody about it. Do you know what I mean?
Mm.
Because if you don't, you know, your head's not made of glass. I can't see what's going on in there, can I? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I can't see in your head. You've got to let someone know. Do you know what I mean? You've got to let someone know if you're in trouble.
What's going on now? Because,
and no one's going to, like you say, nobody's going to feel any worse for you.
Yeah.
But the devastation caused by the other route is phenomenal. Do you know what I mean?
In what way? What's the kind of, because you really, so we've moved past the again, this could be a 5-hour conversation, and there's so much we're missing, and I'd kind of implore anyone to go and actually just to look a bit more about you, especially if you're interested in, especially if you're part of that military community as well. You know, you do stuff with Sky and you're in the media a lot. And people look to you. They do. They really look to you for a bit of guidance.
They do.
And especially when they're down.
Yeah.
And you're telling people, like, you know, those who are suffering, you said this to me on the phone yesterday, we had a real brief conversation. Those who are suffering, it's okay to highlight your problems.
Yeah.
You also said something else, where actually, if you, a small problem, or I can't pay the,
it can escalate.
I can't pay the MOT. I can't do this. I can't do this. I can't do that. In your experience with speaking to guys on a daily basis, what can you elaborate on that?
The small problems will stack up. So it might not be the biggest problem on earth. It might just be something as simple as, I can't get to work, I haven't got enough money this week, or I can't do this, or I can't do that. But when you start stacking them up, if you don't eventually speak out about it, it's just going to get worse. It's going to implode on you, isn't it? Do you know what I mean? Mm. And guys don't do it. It might seem trivial, but once you've added two or three things together, it's now getting bigger, isn't it? The whole thing's getting bigger. You've got to say something. If you've got a problem, and we don't do it in the military. We just don't do it. We don't do it how we should do it. I've said before, I couldn't walk past anybody with his ammo pouch open without going, excuse me, mate, do that up. Do you know what I mean?
Mm.
You help him out, don't you? All this stuff that people go, oh, never leave a man behind on the battlefield. We're leaving him behind in Civvy Street. For Christ's sakes, get a grip. Do you know what I mean? We've got to keep an eye out for each other as a community. So, because no one else is going to do it for us. Nobody else is going to do it for us. And then we've got to try and spread the awareness around everybody else to say that, you know, the ex-forces community is a strong, hard community that can do as well as anybody else.
Mm.
Because I'm getting bad vibes. It's a difficult one to push the problems that squaddies have got, ex-squaddies have got, and still get people in Civvy Street to go, well, they're not all nutters. Do you know what I mean? Because that's the sort of feeling I get. I've heard an employer turn around, oh, I don't employ ex-squaddies because they're all nuts.
Yeah, it's such a misconception.
They're not. They're not. Yeah. And there's some extremely successful guys out there. Do you know what I mean? Some guys are having a few issues. But as I said in my tweet yesterday, you know what I mean? If you were first in the queue to help the country out, you should be first in the queue to get some help as well. Do you know what I mean?
And I think it's, you know, you talk about these little things, like, can't pay the bills, can't do this, can't do that. And actually, if the last thing you're doing is then waking up wet in the bed in the middle of the night because of your time in Sierra Leone, your time in Kosovo,
and
your time in Iraq,
issues,
that can be the tipping point, and where you can't see the kind of...
You know, I've had a broken sleep pattern since I got out.
Really?
Yeah, I'd never sleep for more than 4 hours. Never. Do you know what I mean? And that probably has a bit of an effect on me. You know, I get tired during the day sometimes, all that sort of stuff. Do you know what I mean? And it's not, for me at the moment, it's not a problem because things are going quite well for me. But that could become a problem if, you know, say, for instance, I didn't have the work that I've got, then I haven't got the money, then I have a few problems with my missus, then my kids aren't talking to me, you know what I mean? And that sort of stuff, whoa, and all of a sudden I've got this mountain to climb in front of me, and that's when it becomes impossible. And then that's when blokes start feeling embarrassed that my life is so low and so down that how could I possibly talk about that, because that's ridiculous. No one's ever going to think that I got myself into this mess, you know what I mean? You've got to talk, lads. If you've got the smallest of problems,
just talk.
You've got to tell someone, do you know what I mean?
What projects are happening at the moment, Phil? What's going on in your life?
Well, obviously, you know, I'm work-wise, I'm working for the Americans on Soft Rep and Spec Ops TV, making a few stuff and doing my live show.
Yeah.
You know, I've got the pledge of taking me on now. So I'm pretty
Sky
much...
News.
Sky News, there's the pledge. I'm on there as a regular feature.
How can we watch that?
Just turn your telly on.
Yeah, is it really? On turn your telly on. I'm trying to plug you here, mate, and you're...
Yeah, no, I'm terrible at stuff like that. But my other, outside of that, I want to plug my charity stuff. So this year, Rumble down in Brighton, okay, the Remembrance Rumble is going to be huge this year. The Remembrance Rumble is a thing that I set up a few years ago. It's as much a reunion as anything else, the Remembrance Rumble. That's what I set it up to be. I recognise that the Army and Navy rugby was a huge thing and that people were doing great stuff with it. And moreover, it gives you a chance to get the bead on people. Why is he not here this year? Do you know what I mean? It's one of these things. It's a community activity. Well, I don't turn up to every reunion, but I know when certain friends of mine, he should have been there. He'd have commented on that. Do you know what I mean? Mm. So it's just creating another event where if people want to go. But moreover, it's raising awareness. And this year's theme for the Remembrance Rumble is Leave No Man Behind. Okay, and it's okay to say. So that's what the theme is on this year's Remembrance Rumble. For those of you who don't know, it's basically a team of ex-SAS soldiers, and we fight a team of American soldiers every year, boxing. And this year I've got a parachute regiment officer fighting a parachute regiment private soldier. I've got a Marine fighting an Air Force guy that's a grudge match because they fought in the thing and didn't manage to sort it. So it'll be a good... There'll be some tasty fights this year.
So we've got Remembrance, that's down in Brighton, isn't it?
It's down in Brighton on the 9th of November this year,
9th of November. Yeah. Pledge. How can people... can I follow you on Twitter?
Right, Twitter. Everything's at Big Phil Campion. So if you Google Big Phil Campion, you'll get a piece by the Daily Echo, which slags me off for my time in Winchester, and then everything else is positive.
Good. and I'm going to talk about the... Yeah, when we had... I know you know Brian Wood. I had him on last week. Really great bloke. And we talk about the development he's made since all the shit that he's been...
Yeah, he's been through the mill. Unnecessarily been through the mill. You know, the mill I've been through, I brought on myself a little bit, do you know what I mean? Yeah. But the one that Brian's been through, it was forced upon him by... Don't even get me started on that.
No, we're not going to start on that. That's another one. But my point being was that you see people like you, you've really done some good stuff and you continue to do exceptional things. People like Brian, unbelievable things. And the advocacy work you're doing, the bringing of people together to create a community that essentially what you could look at wasn't there before. We're talking about like the mental health side of things, and yeah, it's not this big like everyone can start crying now. It's just the simple things. It's making sure that we're not all weak.
Yeah,
I say it in a real cringy term to say that, but you know what?
It's not weak.
There is sometimes these little things that we can do to just make things better for everyone. You're a prime example of that. We're gonna have to leave it there, Phil. Anything else you want to...
No, I'm fine, mate, honestly. Just, if I'm going to give anything out of this for the day, it's a hashtag. It's okay to say. Do you know what I mean? And I'm just trying to try and bang that message out this year.
It's okay to say. We'll leave it there.